You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahi ahi, marie, tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea toku ingoa.
Ko Sophia toku ingoa. No mai, haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. Wow, that was the best cookie party I've ever had.
Oh, I wasn't expecting the like rally of people. And then I got like cookie anxiety. I was like, oh my god, this is like a live taste test.
Please never have anxiety about the food you make. You're literally the best chef I know.
Oh, thank you. Did you enjoy your cookies?
I love my cookie. I still have to try the other one, but the brownie one, fabulous.
Oh, you have tried my other one before.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm familiar.
You're familiar.
I'm so ready.
So ready. I hope, I don't know, everyone else maybe. Go get a cookie.
Yeah, today is cookie day.
Cookie day. I'm announcing this cookie party day for everybody.
Yes. And we have a lovely show to accompany you while you go grab a cookie.
Yes, I caught up with artist Anto Yaldizian about his current solo show on at Coastal Signs Desert Island. So what have you got today?
I caught up with artist Zach Langdon Pole about his current solo exhibition at Let Thomas Gallery, Caterpillar Soup.
He aha o whakara. We'd love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tuku patsahi mai. You can text us on 5395-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5
Also, after the show, koe e ware ware e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ēnei kōrero anō hei pakihere roki roki maronga I te pai toku toku o Erirangi Pōho, me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
What's it all for?
Various artists.
Ento Yeldizyan is a Tamaki-based artist of Armenian heritage who works amongst an expanded painting practice that often leans into methodologies of printmaking, utilising methods of monoprinting and stencils along with a playful use of paint and material exploration. Within his current solo show, Desert Island on at Coastal Signs, Yeldizyan presents a series of 7 large-scale works on raw loose canvas, installed in a manner in which the works almost engulf the gallery walls and bring the space into a continuous field of symbols and marks. The works themselves harness this heavy use of motifs and symbols as a kind of centering point to the show. References include camels, palm trees, oil pump jacks, Homer Simpson's thirsty bird, ancient fossils, and the triple G's of Canterbury Clothing Company, Union Jacks, and logos of American defense and oil companies. Through the making of the work, Yeldizyan takes these symbols and applies them to various painterly techniques and almost pulls them away from their own inherent meanings and references and pulls them into this place of a pattern-like language with its own set of meanings. I caught up with Anto about the show and his overall practice.
Hello, my name is Anto Yeldizyan. I am an artist based in Tamaki Makaurau. I'm mostly dealing with images. That's mostly through painting and printing, I often start in like a bit of archival or historic place and find a way to contextualize it.
Gorgeous. And your current exhibition on at Coastal Signs, Desert Island, presents a series of 7 large-scale paintings on loose, raw canvas. I wanted to start this conversation by speaking a bit to the beginnings of this project. Did it come off the back or draw from another specific project, or rather find its footing in something new?
A bit of both, to be unhelpful. I started with, my previous show last year was quite a mixed bag in terms of the format that all the paintings took. I experimented quite a bit with different like painting supports. There was my usual stretch canvas, and there was wooden boards that I was collaging on, silk screening on. And sort of in the last minute, the rush to kind of finish that last show, I picked up the drop sheet that I had lying around in my studio. I tend to really, like a lot of artists, especially painters, tend to be really drawn to that kind of non-subjective mark, that sort of patina that happens.
Kind of scuff the body of the studio, yeah.
The patina of the environment. I've always been drawn to that, and that's kind of one of my side quests, is to figure out how to paint with that without being too predetermined or the kind of happy accident, essentially, that they talk about.
The chance.
That's always a pursuit of mine. So I really fell in love with the surface of these, like, chance marks that were happening on the drop sheet while I was kind of frantically getting my show together, the last show. That turned out to be one of my favorite works. Didn't quite crack it then, but I just kind of kept coming back to the drop sheet. Towards the start of this current body of work, I went back to the stretch canvas, back and forth, trying out new things as I usually do, but it was kind of banging my head against the wall. They weren't kind of really jumping out at me.
Yeah.
So I went back to the drop sheet, and once I committed to that, it just all kind of started flowing, and it turns out all the maybe the 6 or 8 months of studio time I had spent on kind of my traditional canvases were actually the preamble, the sort of the testing ground for what I would commit to being like a full loose sheet body of work.
Yeah, cool. And these works within their imagery, they really seem to pull away from the idea of a singular image and scene compared to that of some of your earlier work, and into this more complex use of motifs as a kind of vocabulary to make up the image. The motifs you use draw from various references, including camels, palm trees, oil pump jacks, Homer Simpson's Thirsty Bird, ancient fossils, the triple G of Canterbury's clothing company, Union Jacks, and logos from American defense and oil companies. I wanted to ask what drew you to this use of specific motifs.
I have been attending to themes around the orientalized representation of the Middle East, which is where I'm from, like the entire history of that, sort of starting in like the Romantic period, which I tend to draw images from, all the way through to the 90s, like conflict era through to today, that's still sort of going on. As a kind of painter interested in representing images, often figures, I suppose I started to develop a bit of a problem with representing bodies. And I think that, well, that was partially out of the more recent conflicts in the Middle East, and as someone who's chronically online and obsessed with, you know, geopolitical news, I had just been so awash with really awful images, as I'm sure a lot of you have as well, a lot of terrible images of bodies, basically. And I sort of kind of developed a problem with representing bodies since then, or at least I wasn't sure what to do with the body, since we'd all seen the body in such kind of gruesome ways. So that kind of drew me to think about establishing like schematics for setting up images without relying on representing a body. So like a landscape without bodies, or some kind of scene where you kind of, there's like an index of a body, but the body's not there. It's essentially like kind of like riffing on that sort of modernist motivation of kind of indexing the artist through the gesture, that kind of thing. So yeah, relying on this, setting up like an absence of the body, I guess painting around that problem, and just and using like essentially marks and symbols instead. It's a scale thing too, and which tends to, like, the scale of the sheets are kind of beyond my arm's reach, which means, you know, I have to reconcile like not having control over the surface. But of course they're kind of quite rough, loose sheets, so I already don't have that much control. So it was almost like a part of committing to those drop sheets, quite rough canvas sheets, knowing that I can't really reproduce images on that in the way that I used to with the paint and the paintbrush on a canvas, the traditional support, which is meant to entirely support the surface, whereas using the stained drop sheets is kind of letting the, I guess, the paint fall through it and kind of become a part of the sheet.
And I also, leaning back into your symbols and use of motifs, what kind of conversations and connections are you bringing up by placing this imagery, many of which quite loaded, into the same space? What is this overlap in symbol and imagery provoking for you and for the audience? Yeah.
I don't know if I can speak too much about provoking, but I think what I'm trying to do in like kind of a dumb and simple way is kind of trying to get around one of my problems with previous shows here in Tamaki Makaurau, dealing with quite highly specific subject matter, again, to my place of origin. You know, it's one thing to speak to something that's relevant in a current affairs context. It's another thing to speak to something, to an audience that that can actually have a way in to that subject. So a lot of my subject matter is, in the past, has been a bit alienating to the New Zealand audience. So it's kind of me trying to actively overcome that. Mm-hmm. And so I would reduce subjects, animals, architectural elements, and so on, into their silhouettes. And in that stencil, through that stencil methodology, kind of aligning them kind of materially, right?
Yeah.
Into silhouettes, they all kind of become symbols. But my motivation for the actual subject matter was thinking about, okay, what are the things that connect us here in Aotearoa to the happenings of the rest of the world? You know, I'm trying to like reduce it right down. I look for these like underpinning sort of things that connect us to kind of the geopolitical history of the Middle East, and that was oil and fossil fuels, and which, you know, no one is kind of safe from, essentially. Yeah, I was thinking about drawing those connections through the idea of fossils, and I'd been interested in birds for a while, specifically this image of a seabird and like an oil spill during the Gulf War oil spill crisis. And I thought that was quite that was sort of for my earlier show that I sort of brought in that relationship between birds who can fly or who can't fly or who are extinct or who are now fossils and are, you know, fodder for crude oil. Yeah, so I just started to be kind of reaching for slightly disparate things, but bringing them together under this like unifying method of turning them into silhouettes via the stencil, right? And then kind of bringing them all into this like same plane. And then what you're left with is, well, for me anyway, is the kind of visual synchronicities between the things. So there's the, especially with like the moa, for example, that big long neck and the, you know, Jurassic scale body with its big two legs, its flightless big body makes me think of those oil well pumps. Images of camels, you know, backlit in the sunset makes me think of images of oil well pumps backlit in the sunset. So it's really informed by like a nexus of images, photography out there. And then in my head, they kind of like layer up, and how can I kind of bring these together, like unify them in some kind of visual sensibility to make essentially like a clusterfuck of references that from afar have like a macro schema, right? They like a lot of times like give rise to like a flag-like arrangement, other times like a rug-like arrangement.
Yeah, and as well as your use of motifs, you also allow for this really playful experimentation of paint within the work, resulting in these textural landscapes of paint across the canvas, bleeds of red flowing paint, and these Rorschach doublings. Do you want to speak a bit to these elements within the work and also how they play against that quite fixed nature of the symbols and motifs within the work?
The kind of bleeding stains and the Rorschach methodology approach all kind of came out of this one reference that I've had kicking around for years, and that's the Shroud of Turin. I don't know if you have a visual.
No, is this
a relic?
It's a butterfly, not butterfly.
It's technically a Rorschach print.
Yes,
but it's supposedly of Christ's body.
Okay, yeah.
That he was wrapped in after his crucifixion, and with a leap of faith, I'm going to look at this. I look at this relic as a painting, a medieval painting. In which case, it's quite astounding to consider it that way. It's like a 1,000 years before its time in terms of its quite a modern approach to, again, to the painting support. I was thinking a lot about shrouds out of that. And I was thinking about essentially bloodstained shrouds, again, out of the a lot of the conflict imagery that's coming out of the Middle East, especially Gaza, in the last few years, circling back to this motivation of communicating this kind of absence of a body, right? And so I think that's where the shroud comes in. It's like a it's an index of Jesus Christ. It's an absence of his body, so to speak. And so I took that and this image of these like fossils and started to think about how I can use the material, like the looseness of the canvas, its ability to like just kind of pass paint through it, and which led me to the Rorschach thing. And so I would get these drop sheets off the shelf, and so they come folded, really roughly folded, been sitting there for months, years, I don't know. So these creases are like really embedded in them, and so I thought that those creases were perhaps the most prominent kind of ready-made aspect of these things. It's the it's the idea of the ready-madeness of the sheets and their like physical form.
Yeah, and the history of their kind of storedness.
Exactly. Being in a warehouse, being on a shelf, and what have you. And so I thought, like, how do I start these paintings, right? Classic problem.
Yeah.
Staring at a blank canvas.
Yeah, the worst thing.
At the head of a new body of work. Where the fuck do I start? And so I just thought I will dip the folded sheets into a big bucket of paint that I had that I very carefully mixed to resemble livestock blood. That's kind of what it ended up looking like. And then I would dip the folded edges and let that soak in. And so, and then I'd unwrap that, would kind of truncate around these ready-made creases, so to speak. And so I'd have this ready-made grid, so to speak. And then I would use that as the scheme to respond to whether it's this like imprint of a fossil or the grid in which I used to arrange the motifs or mirror the motifs to create the pattern. And what I saw to be very much like a rug design kind of sensibility, this idea of having the two axes of symmetry, and you kind of just keep reflecting
very,
and repeating
very
motifs.
Symmetrical. There's like, I think, a few where there's like a slight
Because it is like the back to the that painted grid thing, the sheets were really roughly folded and none of them were really square. So me trying to get this like symmetry out of them was a total wrestle, but that wrestle totally gave rise to I guess there's like the wonkiness of them when you really try and look at, try and find the lines of symmetry and quickly find that it's quite wonky, I think. There's a bit of a vitality to that, perhaps.
Also maybe to your use of stencils on that such rough ground. It's like maybe you're never going to get quite that perfect like stamp, which logos and things do have. So it's, you've kind of that play between that really fixed, rigid, or like trying to do something that's quite calculated to some capacity, but then allowing for these very human kind of like scuffs and frottages of the body, and just like that really materiality of the paint to gain agency within the work. You did already speak a bit about that process of the dipping in the buckets, but do you want to speak a little bit more to the process of stenciling, and I think there's monoprinting in there? Speak a bit more about the different methods you use.
The pterodactyl fossil and this kind of silhouette of an oil well pump with like the two figures that I would kind of quote-unquote paint, the rest being just stenciled. So I would do those on the reverse side, fold them over four times, and then kind of soak the paint through so it penetrates.
Yeah.
So none of those were done on the right side. It was all verso to let that. It's that if you really look up close, because the grain, it's such a wide gauge, the canvas, it's quite like pixely, so to speak. And so I was quite into that and how some of the paint would stain through from the back. Almost looks like a zoomed in photo reproduction or something, because it's like giving pixely. And then if you paint something on top, it does this like Laura Owensy, like multi, like it parses out all of these layers. It's really scrumptious, like for the eyes, right? And it starts to do that classic painting effect of, you know, creating this like depth thing. Right? Something for your eyes to
You're like creating,
dance around.
Creating that sense of depth, not through that imagery, but those applications of pain and really making them known.
Some happenstance, some fraught, some really precise. And then the stencils, I would differentiate with the kind of paint that I'd use. So some are quite obviously sprayed. And some are painted through. So I'd put the stencil down and I would force paint, really wet paint with a sponge through it.
Nice.
I would do it quite quickly.
Yeah.
And I really got into that mark as well, because like those initial marks I mentioned with that free soak, you know, bloodstainy kind of mark, they started to kind of speak to that materiality too. Except they take on this form, kind of amorphous. You can sort of see what it is, but once you repeat that over and over again, you get this, you know, my hand is present without it being kind of directly present. It's they're stains. I see them as stains in the form of a subject.
And also in the installation of these works, I wanted to speak a bit about that. They really come together, because the paintings are so large and there's, seven of them, they really come together and engulf the gallery space itself and really shift it into this continuous field of painting. Do you want to speak a little bit about the thinking of that engulfed nature of the pieces and that shifting of the gallery space?
I don't know when it was that I decided, but at some stage, it was one of those decisions. It was no humming and ahhing. It was like, this is a continuous work. It's like a Bayeux tapestry that should continuously run along the wall. At the same time, I didn't want a narrative to it. I didn't want a start end. I didn't want any kind of punctuation, so to speak. But because the gallery isn't one big long wall, I had to pivot a little bit, and so I kind of separated these out, and I just fixed the gap between them essentially. So as they made their way around the gallery space, a couple of them feel like they're kind of counterintuitively placed on the wall, like the one at the end is sort of like not in the middle of the wall where you would expect to see a painting hung in that context. It was really just motivated by wanting to consider it as a circular thing, like an ongoing thing that's not actually finished.
That was artist Anto Yeldizyan speaking to me about his solo exhibition Desert Island, which is currently on at Coastal Signs until the 18th of April. So be sure to go check that one out.
Various artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
We've now got a bit of a fun song on theme of our cookie party. So I was like, Maya, what song do you want to play? And I said, I think we need a cookie party song. So this is Cookie Scene by The Go Team, and we've been bopping to it. So I hope you guys enjoy as well. Here it is.
Well, I'm feeling kind of funny because that they don't know my name. Call me a villain, I'm taking over one day. It's a thing I do. Ready to start this journey. You can come and follow and just listen to the kids sing. Yeah, it's the D-Y, it's the D-Y-C. It's the D-Y, it's the D-Y-C. Buses passing by, schools hanging signs. People to my right on the phones are waving high.
Visionary Kim Gordon is back with a record that tells you what to do on the packet. Play me, and we're happy to oblige because it's a banger. Tell me what you want, you have to see. Your mates on 95BFM Drive are giving away copies of the album all week to B-card holders. So tune in, turn on those tardinga, and await your cue to enter. Play Me, the new album from Kim Gordon. Available now wherever fine music is sold.
Garth, where's your hat? No hat, no play.
I don't have one, sir.
Then go on and pick a hat from Lost Property.
Oh, sir, those hats all have nits.
It's nits or melanoma, Garth.
It's a no hat, no play summer, so it's lucky 95BFM have you sorted with sweet merch for your noggins. Choose from four designs, two classic cap designs, one cord design, and a bucket hat. Pre-order yours now from twotonesmerch.co.nz.
It's music.
95. You can listen to us while you're at home doing some chores, or you can take us along for company while you're driving in your car.
Go to 95bfm.com for show podcasts.
Mark William Lewis and his Foggy London Tunes are heading over to the isthmus we call home. And lucky for B-card holders, we have tickets to give away to his show. So keep that dial on 95BFM Drive for your chance to win. Mark William Lewis album release tour at Double Whammy April 6th. Tickets available now at eventfighter.co.nz.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
Zach Langdon Pohl is a Tāmaki-based artist whose primarily sculptural-based practice explores contrasting concepts and imagery, proposing unlikely juxtapositions into these often hybrid forms. His current solo exhibition at Let Thomas Gallery Caterpillar Soup presents a series of jigsaw puzzle collages, whereby the artist has placed the pieces of puzzles to make these combined collage images. Imagery of warfare, volcanic matter, nature, and diagnostic imaging melded together, creating this almost pixelated technological material language. The works question what these juxtaposing forms could mean in conversation with each other. I caught up with Zach about the show at Let Thomas and his wider practice. We also briefly touched on his project currently showing at the Domain Winter Gardens titled Memory Garden, The Kiss. Here is that interview now.
Kia ora, my name is Zach Langdon-Pohl. I was born in Tāmaki Makaurau and grew up here, but then I studied in Germany. I moved to Germany in 2014 and was there for 7 years or so, and have been back since COVID, but have continued to kind of show internationally, predominantly in Australia in the last 5 years as well. But yeah, I suppose I work in a lot of different mediums. Sculpture is probably broadly like a descriptor of what I do, but this is a kind of catch-all phrase to include things like jigsaw puzzle collages, wood carvings, photography in some senses, and a lot of different things.
I guess to begin with speaking about your current exhibition at Let Thomas, Caterpillar Soup, would you like to firstly, I guess, speak to this choice of title and how it offers a vantage point for the show?
Yeah, I thought that this metaphor of the caterpillar soup, which is actually a scientific term for what happens inside the chrysalis when the caterpillar forms a chrysalis and is dissolving its body to become a butterfly. Mm. And I guess because a lot of what I do is guided by this question of when does one thing become another?
Mm.
And yeah, this felt like just a very apt metaphor for this process of the delineation between one thing and another being literally the soup. And I feel like maybe that's a nice way into a lot of different tangents that the show takes. But yeah, this transformative moment, shall we say.
Mm, kind of capturing this process of becoming, I guess.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the show is presenting a series of jigsaw works which sees you piecing together puzzles cut the same way to make these combined images. I'd love to know a little bit about where you kind of first came across this way of making. Are you able to speak to this way of making and how it came to be in your practice?
Yeah, well, there is kind of a precise moment that I recall, which was during a COVID lockdown, and my nephew had a Where's Wally jigsaw puzzle on the table, and my mother was doing like a Dutch still life
classic
jigsaw puzzle. and then I noticed that the shape of the jigsaw pieces were universal, so you could effectively recollage these two very different forms of image making together. It wasn't so much the content of Where's Wally and Dutch Still Lives that I was interested in, but this is a really beautiful medium then to kind of explore a lot of other, I guess, deeply researched subjects that I spend kind of years going through. And yeah, it's been a really fruitful medium. So this recollaging effectively of different images together. And I suppose as well, this question that I alluded to earlier of when does one thing become another, it's also a question of belonging and not belonging. So I feel like while the jigsaw puzzles from different images fit together perfectly on the surface, there's this disjuncture and, yeah, this question of what belongs where, or this belonging and not belonging together. So it's been a kind of ongoing medium since I think the first jigsaw puzzles were made for a show at the City Gallery in Wellington called Containing Multitudes, and then now that's been going on nearly 6 years or so.
To add on to, I guess, that kind of bigger question that underlies your practice, does fitting physically always mean they fit conceptually? Are you trying to draw any kind of conclusion in placing them together?
I think I like that tension between, again, the belonging and not belongings. But I guess the underlying sense for me too is that is to draw out these connections that maybe not as visible on the surface. So this can slide as well, and this slides particularly in the show between things like microphotography of like neurons inside a human brain or a mouse brain, and up to larger images of things like a volcano eruption, and it's drawing out what are the connections there, and I think that's a bit of a leading question of the show. What is it that pieces these things together? And I think that's a open space for people to enter. But underlying it, I do have the sense that everything is connected at the same time.
Yeah. Do you kind of leave that completely up for interpretation for viewers, or do you have your own interpretation that you kind of are secretly hoping unfolds?
Well, I mean, another step that's happened with this body of jigsaw puzzles too, is I should say, is that the ways that two images are collage together in jigsaw puzzle format, there's like a third image, which is the, I guess, the stencil or the template in which those images are coming together. So there's a triangulation in every single jigsaw puzzle work in the show. So this is often like a kind of ghost image. Like one, for example, is a detail of like a moth plant, which is a invasive weed, but is kind of found in urban environments. And I think this third image, what that invites, it's kind of a silhouette really between these two images, and I think that invites like a durational looking, so the work unfolds. And I think what I really like about this form that I've been working with in terms of the third image also is that, well, your eye never settles. So what you're taking in is never static, and it's constantly jostling between these three images. And I think, yeah, I think that's a way of inviting people into a interpretation durationally, shall we say.
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking as well, I think what's interesting is I think for many people the material of jigsaw puzzles can be kind of nostalgic things, but the way in which they are recontextualized or re-understood in the show makes them appear almost mechanical or pixelated or technological, which appears almost at odds with the potential nostalgia of the material, bringing something we might consider as just a game or a gift store purchase into the world of contemporary art. Are you able to speak a little more to this material language in the works with respect to those ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of things that drew me to the jigsaw puzzle format. I mean, there are art historical precedents, like someone like Felix Gonzalez Torres and his work with jigsaw puzzles. And I think in that sense, there's an underlying fragility to the work, which is maybe consistent in a number of different things that I do. And I think that's kind of an emotional content too. There's a sense of contingency or things coming together or falling apart. So I think that possibility of the jigsaw puzzle, yeah, being this metaphor of forming a larger picture, but that picture also having the capacity to disintegrate or come apart is, yeah, a kind of one thing. But then I think another interest was really this, I guess, looking at how images are disseminated through the world and maybe even the mediums or the formats in which, you know, power is kind of spread. Like, for example, a classic place to see a jigsaw puzzle is in a museum gift shop. And a lot of what, at least in my life growing up, seeing in museum gift shops was of, like, European master paintings made into jigsaw puzzles. And this is kind of a way of disseminating culture. And I always found growing up in Aotearoa, like, and learning a bit of our kind of modernist art history as well, like how these forms of culture had been interpreted through reproduction. So someone like Colin McCann painting his version of Mondrian from, you know, black and white art forum images or something like this. And that in a way kind of impacting the translation and how that happens. And I think there's something to meditate on in terms of the jigsaw puzzle, that there is a kind of still a way of smuggling culture or delivering other forms of culture and high culture and reproducing things that are seen to create more value through their reproduction. So I think there is a meditation on that too, but people love jigsaw puzzles. There is like this draw as well. And yeah, maybe there is a kind of nostalgia or also kind of byline, kind of leisure to this is how we might engage with art in a kind of holiday context or something like this, and a slowing down. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot to the jigsaw puzzle.
We could really unpack this for ages.
Yeah.
You spoke a little bit to, I guess, some of the imagery earlier. And I guess in terms of process, I was interested, how did you kind of go about sourcing, planning and piecing together these puzzles into a work? Do the puzzles find you and then a concept evolves, or do you start conceptually and then work from there?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of different tangents in the show as well. So, and like I say, this format is a beautiful way to bring things together that might not normally belong together. I think one, for example, is there's maybe two works in the show which are more focused on, I guess, veracity, the veracity or truth-telling capacity for like war photography.
Mm.
So there's one work in the show which is actually annotated by this documentary filmmaker, Earl Morris, where he's looking, he did a very close reading of these two photographs by Roger Fenton from the Crimean War, because he found two different negatives and he found that the cannonballs had been kind of moved to the middle of the road. And he was trying to figure out, well, what is it that makes this what became quite a famous war image and one of the first early photography war images, and what is it to kind of convey the horrors of that situation. And he's looking more particularly at, like, I guess the staging of that, because he has figured out evidently that the photographer moved the cannonballs to the road to make a more dramatic image. And he uses this kind of analysis to also look at this photographer, Arthur Rothstein, who in the 1930s, during the Dust Bowl and Depression in the States, and was looking at a particular set of photographs where he had moved this cow skull or steer skull around also as a prop in this kind of arid landscape, and that forms the silhouette of this, the largest work in the show, is this image of this steer skull from Arthur Rothstein. And yeah, I guess so there's one element there that's looking at a history of image making and what is it to convey the truth or indeed the veracity, even though these photographers may have kind of staged something a bit more to get across the point of how, for example, horrific war landscape is, or how arid and how terrible the climate was in the 1930s in the States. So there's a kind of, I guess, always a deeper looking or meditation on how we look as well. So content like that is forming one part of the show. And then, yeah, completely different content is more looking from a scientific lens at, for example, how the brain works and scientific imaging of neurons and synapses from both human and animal brains as well. So, yeah, if that helps, there's a few
good facts.
Roads in there.
I did want to speak as well. There is, of course, a sculptural work of a chair where a fourth leg has been replaced by a tree branch, also in the show. Placed in conversation with these jigsaws, how do you kind of see the relationship between the sculpture and that series?
Well, the sculpture is part of its own series as well, which is called Another World Inside This One. And this had started with wood chopping axes previously. And the premise that is maybe easy to miss with the sculpture is that there's a sapling of an oak tree that's growing through the back part of this chair, which is made of oak wood. But what you also see is that, yeah, the back leg is missing and the back brace is missing, half of it. And all that wood has been carved to make this tree, which is then painted. So it looks kind of hyper-realistic.
Mm.
But the tree is made of the chair itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then it's painted kind of hyper-realistically. So I guess, yeah, the connection there being, I guess, this transformative moment and maybe as well the work being a bit of like a collage of time. So to me, it's a kind of imagining of the young sapling tree from which the wood for the chair would be eventually made, so it's kind of maybe a calling back to the life of this wood. And in that sense, yeah, this collaging of time or disjunctures of time as well. And maybe the fact that, much like the jigsaw puzzle third image thing, is that the works are constantly in this moment of transformation between one thing and another and, yeah, are becoming. And I think maybe that's another iteration of what kind of underpins a lot of my work, is this is kind of honing in on the fact that everything is moving all the time and everything is in the process of becoming another thing. So it's quite difficult, for example, to kind of pin things without their context and without their relationship to time, and also the possibility for one thing to become another and to change and to be read completely differently, which is in itself kind of a metaphor for art, right? Like, I might have my own ideas about what my work means, but I think that's constantly shifting, and what that means in 100 years might also be completely different. So
you also mentioned that you've got a project on at the Domain as well. Would you like to speak a little bit to that as well, and I guess maybe a connection to that in the show?
Yeah, well, this is will be the first showing of a body of work called Memory Garden, and this is a different medium entirely, which is marble. And working with marble has been really eye-opening and beautiful experience, and particularly as well because it contains this deep time, right? Marble itself is a kind of is a fossilized part of the earth was once like a sea floor, you know, and now is kind of hardened in this crystalline rock. And I think as well that project is in terms of time is looking at deep time and the transformation of those stones and making stone really the subject of those works, because the premise really of those works is that they're faithful recreations of very well-known works from Western art history. So this one in particular is a replica of Rodin's The Kiss, which is a very iconic sculpture of two figures kissing, and this kind of positioned on this rock. And the premise really of this work is that it's completely faithfully recreated, divot for divot, but the figures have now been removed, so only really what remains is the stone itself. And with Rodin, he quite famously didn't finish his figures, so the figures are kind of joined to the stone. So what I spent a long time modelling and kind of carving and imagining was where the figures end and the rock begins. And so you have these like kind of negative details of their bodily impressions on the stone. So it forms a kind of ghost image, also similar to the puzzles in a way. But I guess what that really is about is a reframing of attention and giving perhaps more credence to rock being rock. Because of course, in those works, you know, humans are the center of the world, but maybe in this reframing, there is a different focus entirely. And that is the stone itself. And what's often overlooked in those sculptures is the kind of the nature or the flora or fauna which supports these kind of heroic moments has now become itself the sole subject. And it's a very beautiful location because it's positioned right outside the Winter Gardens in the Domain. And I think, speaks quite well. There's, of course, a lot of kind of classical sculpture around that environment too. So I think there's a reflection as well on, what is it that we're really looking at here?
That was artist Zach Langdon-Pohl speaking to me about his current solo exhibition on at Let Thomas Caterpillar Soup. The exhibition is on until the 18th of April, and also his work Memory Garden The Kiss is on at the Domain Winter Gardens now, so be sure to check that out also.
Oh, that's a good art!
You're listening to Various Artists on 95BFM. We'll be right back to give you your arts guide. This is James Kay, Days Go By.
They know you, face down, even.
It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists.
It's paintings in there.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tamaki Makaurau, as mentioned on the show, Zach Langdon Pohl's Caterpillar Soup is on at Let Thomas Gallery until the 18th of April.
Also mentioned on the show, Desert Island by Anto Yeldizian is on at Coastal Signs until the 18th of April.
Claudia Jowett's solo exhibition Ualevu is on at Melanie Roger Gallery until the 2nd of April.
Goldie's Grove by Jude Stevens is on at Room. Also on at Room is Get Ready With Me, a group show by Aria McInnes, Kiani Refa, and Rita Takuchi. Both are on at Room until the 11th of April.
Life Stories, a solo exhibition by Marie Shannon, is on at Trish Clark until the 2nd of May.
Ingrained by Martino Gamba is on at Object Space until the 31st of May.
Amon Ngakuru's Telltale, a Dog is on at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery until the 17th of May.
Dreaming From Afar, a group show exhibiting works by Brunel Diaz-Prims, Gian Manick and Tyrone Tewa is on at Gus Fisher Gallery until the 2nd of May.
And Gordon Bennett and Emily Karaka, After the Undercurrents, is on at Artspace Aotearoa until the 11th of April. If you have something you want on the Art Guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi kia koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's all for us for various artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us.
Zach Langdon Pohl.
And Anto Yeldizian.
Nei rā, hoki te mihi kia koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com or check out our Instagram at 95bfm various artists for more.
Ka hoki mai mātoa, te rā wiki. Next up is the Land of the Good Groove with Mari. My name is Soph.
I'm Maya.
And that was various artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening.
Oh, no you won't.
No you won't.
You won't. It's Good Friday, I think.
It's Good Friday next
no,
week.
No, have a good Easter, guys.
Happy Easter, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks. Time.
2 weeks. Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.